Hello again. This is Carol Bond returning with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated January 16th, 2016. We'll begin this part of our broadcast with the obituaries. Ruby Virginia Ginny Kaufman, 87, of Argenta, Illinois, passed away 9:47 p.m. February 13, 2016, with her children by her side at Heartland Manor Care, Decatur. Services will be 11 a.m. Thursday, February 18th, at the Argenta United Methodist Church, Argenta, with Pastor Bob Baker officiating. Burial will follow at Friends Creek Cemetery. Visitation will be 10 to 11 a.m. Thursday at the church. The family requests casual attire. Calvert Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Harbor Lights Hospice. Deborah Elizabeth Martin, 63, of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, February 13, 2015, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Honoring Deborah Elizabeth Martin's wishes, cremation services will be provided by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home and Cremation Services. There will be no public services. Tamara J. Tammy Stout, 69, of Decatur, passed away Saturday, February 13th, in her home with her family by her side. Services to celebrate Tammy's life will be 11 a.m. Thursday, February 18th, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be for 1 hour prior to the services. Entombment will be in the Star of Hope Mausoleum at Graceland Cemetery. Memorials in Tamara's honor are suggested to the American Cancer Society. Laverne L. Weldy White first saw the face of her Savior on Saturday, February 13th, after a lifetime of loving him with her heart, soul, and mind. A visitation will be held at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion, on Thursday, February 18th, from 5 to 7 p.m., with a funeral service to follow on Friday, February 19th, at 10 a.m. Burial will be in the Mount Zion Township Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorials be made to East Park Baptist Church. We turn now to the editorial page, and this column is entitled Superintendent Decision Needs to Be Clarified. It's what the newspaper calls Our Views. The Decatur School Board has created a lot of questions with their decision not to renew Superintendent Lisa Taylor's contract when it expires in June 2017. Board President Sherry Perkins told the popular Taylor last week that she had met all the performance goals set by the board, but her contract would not be renewed. When news got out on Thursday, the reaction was immediate. A Wear Yellow campaign was quickly launched via social media, and many groups pointed to tonight's school board meeting to voice their feelings. Three board members who opposed the decision, Brian Hodges, Dan Oakes, and Fred Spanis, released statements disagreeing with the board's decision. The Decatur Education Association, which represents teachers and staff, also issued a statement in support of Taylor. When the board meets this afternoon, the members who voted not to extend her contract, Perkins, Barry A. Butts, Alita Graham, and T.J. Jackson, need to clear up several issues and answer some questions. What did the board actually do? is the first question listed. The board apparently made the decision in a closed session last week. While personnel matters can be discussed in a closed session, action has to be taken in an open public session. So it's questionable whether any action has been officially taken. The board will have to take the action in open session, which is required by law. In addition, the board did not give the proper notice that the meeting was being held. The Decatur Herald and Review has asked the Illinois Attorney General's Office Public Access Counselor to review the board's process. What are the next steps? If the board follows through, what can students, teachers, parents, and taxpayers expect for the next 18 months? It's hard to imagine that more than a year with a lame duck superintendent will be beneficial to anyone. Is the board planning another extensive and expensive superintendent search? What is the basis for this decision? As we've seen over the last few days, Taylor is widely popular with students, faculty, staff, and the public. It's rare to see such public support for a school superintendent. The board apparently conceded that Taylor met all of the performance goals which were set by the board. So why consider dismissal of a superintendent who is popular with nearly all of her constituents, met the goals set by the board, and has capably led the district? How is this decision going to improve Decatur schools? It's difficult to understand how this decision will make Decatur schools better in the short or long term. The four board members should explain why they believe this is the best decision for Decatur schools. Finally, board members should remember that Decatur School District taxpayers have been supportive of the district's efforts. The voters agreed to tax themselves in order for the district's two high schools to undergo renovations, and property tax increases have been accepted with little complaint. Decatur residents care about their schools, and the board needs to explain why they made this decision. Here's an interesting take on the upcoming primaries in South Carolina. It's on the editorial page, and it's an article written by Kathleen Parker. Bewildering South Carolina is the headline. Out on the hustings, people often ask me, "Can you explain South Carolina?" I just shake my head. "It's complicated," I say. The simple answer, eternal and everlasting, is anti-secessionist James Pettigrew's remark, quote, "South Carolina is too small for a republic and too large for an insane asylum," end quote. For those keeping an eye on the upcoming South Carolina primary contests, including the droves of journalists now combing the state for fresh fodder, a bit of background is in order. As to my bona fides, suffice it to say that my family settled here, hereabouts, in the late 1600s. Essentially, the state is three within one, each with its own personality and voting history. Upcountry, conservative, Midlands, mixed, and Lowcountry, liberal, plus the separate nation of Charleston, which is its own singular place. The city is a Democrat's town, owing not least to its large African American community. But also, port towns tend to play a little looser than the landlocked. Most of South Carolina otherwise consists of small rural towns that honor tradition in all its forms. Most important, however, South Carolina is the joker in the nation's deck. Although increasingly difficult to put the state in a box politically, so many non-natives have discovered its charm and beauty. Certain relevant characteristics of its indigenous peoples bear mention. First, South Carolinians aren't just anti-establishment. They're anti-everything, if it means they're expected to perform or respond in certain predicted ways. This tendency is especially acute when elites, also known not from around here, are involved. Thus, a local might do the opposite of what is anticipated based on history or demographics, even if against his own interests. Companion to this quirk is a strong current of what-the-hellism that courses through the veins of generations of good old boys and girls, i.e., descendants of the Scots-Irish with all their stubborn pride. If they don't much cotton to foreigners, see above, they also don't care much for authority. In their book, the fact that candidates think they should be president pretty much disqualifies them for the office. But you gotta vote for somebody. May as well be Donald Trump. Is he everything a true Southerner dislikes in another human being? Absolutely. But if the elites don't like him, goes the thinking, then maybe I do. See how this thing rolls? Same thing on the Democratic side. At any other time, Bernie Sanders would be an impossible candidate, unfamiliar and beyond the norms of Southern rectitude. He's loud, angry, and graceless, with an accent you don't hear much in these parts. But Sanders has something the others don't. He's real as dirt. If there's one thing a native son or daughter can't stand, it's fakery. Whether from the ladies who smile and say, "How nice," when they mean something extremely different, or the politician who suddenly can't take his hands off a gun or Bible, Southerners have a knack for spotting a fraud. Hillary Clinton enters troubled waters here, particularly among African Americans. Despite a likely endorsement from the ever-influential Representative James Clyburn, it may not matter enough. As just one signal, Clinton's recent visit to the state for Martin Luther King Jr. Day celebrations left many feeling colder than the weather dictated. She was nowhere in sight for the march in Columbia, where Sanders joined the front line. At a ceremony on the State House steps, she breezed out of the warmth of the building, took her seat, and read her prepared remarks. People noticed these things. At another service later in the day, half of the black audience held Sanders signs, according to Bud Ferrillo, a longtime South Carolina political operative and now head of the nascent South Carolina Collaborative on Race and Reconciliation. The message? The Clinton machine is showing its age and is out of touch with Democratic voters in 2016, said Ferrillo. His prediction? Clinton might still win the Palmetto State, but if Sanders puts in the time Barack Obama did in 2007-2008, quote, "he lived here," quote, he could pull an upset. An African-American friend in Camden responded to my plea for comment with only a photo showing Clinton dancing on the Ellen DeGeneres show with the host's black DJ. The caption playing off the rap hit Watch Me by Whip Nene. Now watch me beg for all the black votes. That's put in quote. Ouch. So there you have it. Much condensed, but representative based on my own several conversations and interviews. Then again, what the hell? It's South Carolina. All you know for sure is that whatever happens, there will be blood. And again, this is a column written by Kathleen Parker. We have some time today to take a look at the Decatur Tribune and find out what Paul Osborne is talking about in his column, City Beat. His first topic is this: why was Decatur Police Chief fired? The headline in this column is the question that citizens have been asking each other since the news broke last Thursday that Decatur Police Chief Brad Sweeney had been fired. I was as shocked as anyone else in the community when I received the short news release from City Manager Tim Gleason stating the chief had been fired. Here's the complete text of the city manager's release. Quote, effective February 4th, 2016, the employment of Brad Sweeney as an employee of the City of Decatur is terminated. This is a personnel matter and there will be no additional comment. Deputy Police Chief James Getz has been appointed interim police chief for the City of Decatur. End quote. Continuing with Osborne's comments now. Sweeney had been with the department since 1995 and was appointed police chief a little over a year ago, in January 2015. It is certainly human nature for everyone to want answers as to why this happened, as the police chief is a highly public figure in the community. However, he is not an elected official. Sweeney was appointed by former city manager Ryan McCrady, and it is the city manager's call to make. And under our form of government, the mayor and city council do not have a role in this process and do not vote on such appointments. The police chief reports to the city manager and not to the council. The city manager is his boss, as is every other employee of the city. Essentially, the only employee the mayor and city council have control over is the city manager. If a majority of the members of the city council want to hire, fire, or retire a city manager, they have the power to do so. But they don't have any power to hire, fire, or retire any other city employee, including the police chief. The only power city council could indirectly have on employees would be in budget cuts that would impact the number of employees the city could afford. But the resulting cuts would be made by the city manager. Since news of the firing of Sweeney last week, the mayor and most of the city council members have not commented on it, and that's a wise decision. A few council members may believe the city council will be involved in the search for a new police chief. Actually, the city council should not be involved for the reasons I gave earlier in this column. That action does not come under the responsibility of the city council members. Under the old form of government that Decatur had over a half century ago, council members attempted to get friends and relatives into such jobs. The council manager form of government, which we now have, stopped that practice, and government is better for it. As far as I know, there isn't any law enforcement agency that has an active investigation going on concerning Sweeney at the present time. So it is reasonable to believe the former police chief's termination was not the result of any criminal actions on his part. That's where it stands as I write this column. Facebook, the modern over-the-back fence, irresponsible gossip and rumor mill on city issues that many rely on for, quote, the truth, of course, had many posts from many people who knew all the reasons that Sweeney was fired. The fact is, the city of Decatur will not make an official statement on the details of the reason for the firing because it is a personnel matter and the city could be held legally liable for any public comments about a personnel matter. For those who believe that a Freedom of Information Act request to see Sweeney's personnel file would be a great way to find out about what happened, personnel files are exempt from FOIA requests. The only exception would be if information which is not exempt from disclosure under the Freedom of Information Act is placed in an employee's personnel file to hide it from the public. What Sweeney did to merit termination from his boss, if it is not criminal conduct, I would surmise it was an act of insubordination or a serious lack of judgment on something the city manager felt could not be tolerated in the department. Although some bits and pieces of accurate information are bound to leak out in this size of community, there will be no official confirmation or rejection of that information. It's a personnel matter subject to privacy laws upheld by the court. Continuing on, Paul Osborne says this: Over the many years that I've been publisher of this newspaper, I've always been well acquainted with each Decatur police chief before he was appointed, except for John Race, who was brought in from outside the community, and Brad Sweeney. When his name was announced as the new police chief last year, I really didn't know much about him, but he was someone who had served the department for 20 years and had rendered a lot of service to the community, we shouldn't forget that, and started some innovative programs while at the helm. I am saddened by what happened to his career and the awful impact his firing must be having on his family and friends. My prayers are with all of them, the department, with Interim Police Chief James Getz, and our city. I have the highest respect for the Decatur Police Department. God bless and protect all who serve in our law enforcement agencies. I glanced at the letters to the editor and didn't find any recent, but I spotted this, which I thought was amusing. Dear editor, when I was young, I watched the clouds. Now, being older, I watch the clowns. I wish I was young again. And this was written by R.L. Parrish, DHS, class of 48. Evidently, he was talking about the recent race for the presidency. Well, we could probably use a little more humor today. So here are some items from the Last Laugh page that was included in a publication from the AARP. First is this, fire safety tips. Use a fire extinguisher instead of a van full of ammunition. That's what a Clay County, Missouri man learned when he found his trash fire burning out of control. He tried to put it out by driving over it. When his tires started burning, he remembered he had a full tank of gas and live rounds inside. The results? A volley of shots and massive plume of flames. Seems like he's just going to have to take a loss, a local cop said. I don't think they're going to cover it. And here's one called Armed and Furry. Hunter Allie Carter's aptly named dog, Trigger, stepped on her rifle and shot her in the foot. A recent report found at least 10 cases of dogs shooting people since 2004, usually in hunting accidents. The Washington Post could find only one case of a cat shooting its owner. The owner left his pistol on the kitchen counter, where it could be easily knocked off, a temptation no cat could resist. Here's a good riddle. What's the difference between ignorance and apathy? I don't know, and I don't care. That pretty well sums it up. An insert called Jeers and Cheers has this. Under Cheers, to the debate team at the maximum security prison that took on a team from Harvard University and won. They caught us off guard, said one student. The three-man team from Eastern New York Correctional Facility earned points for creativity and strong preparation. The program is sponsored by Bard College, and prisoners say it gives them the confidence to move past a life of crime, which is a good thing, in my opinion. Under Jeers, we see this. Jeers to the police department in New Haven, Connecticut. To teach people to lock their cars, city police announced they would start checking for visible valuables and remove any they found in unlocked cars. Owners could then retrieve their stuff at a police station. The police chief called this, quote, a brilliant initiative. But residents apparently viewed it as theft. The program was canceled after just one day. Here's a tip from Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg in the New York Times. Fight, this is a quote, fight for the things that you care about, but do it in a way that will lead others to join you. And finally, this kind of bad riddle. What's the difference between a hippo and a Zippo? Answer, one is heavy and the other is a little lighter. And with that, we'll conclude today's reading of the Decatur Herald and Review and the Decatur Tribune, dated February 16th, 2016. This has been Carol Bond. I look forward to reading with you again.